Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
We are hanging out in studio with Brock Huard, former quarterback at the University of Washington, was a third-round pick there in the late 90s, hung around the NFL for a handful of years, and then moved his way into the broadcasting side of things, was at ESPN calling college games for over a decade. You guys have seen his face dozens of times through the years, is now calling college and NFL games for Fox, and he has chose to move from Seattle, where you did a morning drive forever there, and are now making Denver your home. So welcome. Stoke, you had something on the tip of your tongue.
Yes,
as we were going to break. You had another question for Brock.
I did, and thanks for hanging around, buddy. Deshaun Watson.
Yes. Has he been a conversation in town?
Yeah, a little bit yesterday. how do you view the prospect of the Denver Broncos trying to get Deshaun Watson? Is he worth three first-round picks? You think that would be a good move by their general manager, George Payton? How do you view just the whole Deshaun Watson situation coming to the Broncos?
Yeah, I view it. It's been wonderful conversation from your guys' morning show all the way throughout. You all have quite a fraternity here. I was saying that to Zach off the air here, Stoke, as we're sitting here just talking and reminiscing and talking sports radio business, and to hear you all go back and forth, and you know, Mike and is a D-Mac, and by the way, when D-Mac said he's 5'7", 160, I never met him in person. I'm like, I've listened to him a lot. I'm like, I did not picture 5'7", 165.
You pictured 8 feet tall.
Yeah. I pictured the normal sports radio, you know, like 300, like just a big old dude. Cause he's got a big old opinion.
Yes, he does.
In a great way. So it's fun to listen to those guys. I had Deshaun, actually, when Bill O'Brien got fired, Bill O'Brien's last game.
Oh.
For a while there, we were the firing squad, the crew that I was with, as Matt Patricia got fired and Bill O'Brien got fired and Dan Quinn got fired. We were really worried that we were just getting everybody canned and that nobody would want us working their games. Deshaun is, I would say this, if Trevor Lawrence, and I'll get to would I make that move or not, but when I saw Trevor Lawrence as an 18-year-old early enrollee, you knew from that moment. Whenever I was around Deshaun, and I remember I was at ESPN doing studio shows, and the day he came and did a quote-unquote car wash, right? SportsCenter, College Football Live, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the love that their sports information director had for him, and the two or three folks that traveled up from, you know, with him from Clemson up to Bristol, Connecticut, I had not seen that kind of affinity for a collegiate student athlete ever.
Wow.
Ever. I mean, they just truly loved him. To watch his teammates, and Houston was one of the places this year. Some of them were a little bit different because of COVID. Houston was one, the way their practice field was set up, that we could stand and watch, obviously from a long distance, but could still actually see what was going on, and to see him interact and to feel the love that everybody has for him. And that's what makes this so just off. Is that in this relationship with him in that organization is broken from the ownership side?
Right.
Because you would say, man, his teammates love him. The trainers love him. You know this, Brandon. Those players that just people gravitate to, you want to be around that guy, that he's got that magnetism. And as I said, collegiately, there was nobody that I was ever around as a young man like that. You know, I've certainly have been around plenty of professionals in that way, that they can be magnetic. But he is off the charts, just absolutely off the charts, which is why it scrambles my mind to think that Houston won't make it work.
Right.
And that he's got a $10 million cap number.
Right.
Right. And a new coach that will eventually come in and a new GM, and you're not going to make that work? I mean, Shefty's is sourced in the greatest source there is. And when he says, hey, it's broken between him and owner and the players today, we've seen it, right? We've seen it with Jalen Ramsey. We've seen it with Ngakoue. We've seen it that they've got power to drive themselves out if they don't want to be there. So I would tend to fall on the side that you need to do what it takes. You're not going to get Justin Fields at number 9. Ryan Fitzmagic and, you know, some of these other grown men that are grizzled, as I said, and mature guys could come in here and compete with Drew. But that's a game changer. That's a game changer. And I would spend 2-3 first round picks to get it done. The Seahawks spent 2 firsts and a third
Jamal Adams, right?
On a safety.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And a safety that can't catch nor cover. He can sack. I mean, he can hit you, that dude cannot catch a cold, and he couldn't cover broken Julian Edelman this season. So, and they gave up two firsts and a third. The Rams gave up two firsts for Jalen Ramsey. This is your quarterback that could be here for the next decade that, as I said, is just a, got a magnetism. And I think enough just charisma and equity to come into, as we talked last segment, this market and say, I'm not John Elway.
Right.
I'm not Peyton Manning. I've not done it. But you know what? I won national titles. I'm beloved by many. And that won't overwhelm me like it has so many that preceded him.
I cannot imagine the excitement that this town would have if he touched down in Centennial Airport and was the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. And, you know, I think we have a tendency, because the draft is so important and it's the lifeblood of your organization, we have a tendency to, you know, be sometimes, and some folks are here on this issue, like those first-round picks, they're like, you know, diamonds.
Yep.
But the reality is, go look at the last, you know, 8-10 Broncos drafts. Which combination of three players that are first-round picks wouldn't you trade for Deshaun?
And you hope you are never, as an organization, drafting in the top 18. And Bill Polian will tell you, as he did Mike and Stink, or last week, 2 weeks ago, when I was listening, driving Titus to school. By the way, my 11-year-old Titus will all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, say, I am doing Millennial Ben is the most
that is so funny.
It is the most hilarious thing with Titus, doesn't it? Never done that before, but we just kind of chuckle with that. And Pauline says, yeah, there's about 15 first round grades, 15 to 18 in any given year, maybe 18, but somewhere in that spot. And you don't want to be drafting there.
Right.
And if you get Deshaun here, you're not going to be likely drafting in that 18. So, and that's what the Seahawks thought. That's what the Rams thought. That's what these teams have thought, is they've given away their picks in the 20s and said, the difference between the guy in the 20s and the guy in the 50s is really about your development and your scheme and your teaching. And growing that talent and finding the right fit is as much as it is just a freakish, unbelievably generational athlete. So, yeah.
And Brock, you know, and the other thing is, it's not a crapshoot, right? You know Jalen Ramsey's a stud.
Yeah.
You know that you hit on him. And so it's not like, okay, yes, we're going to be drafted in the 20s. And, you know, those picks, like you said, there's not much difference between them in the 40s or 50s, whatever.
Yeah.
But also, the chance that you might miss on one of those guys. And you're not going to miss on Jalen Ramsey. You already know he's a stud in the NFL.
Here's going to be the hard thing, though, that I think Deshaun's got great counsel around him. I think he's got a good agency around him. I think they would say, Deshaun, like, hey, man, if you do well here, like, you can be a hero. Look at the God that, you know, John Elway is in this town. Look at how beloved Peyton is here. And now you're following a bunch of guys that have fallen flat. Like, the opportunity is enormous. And I think Deshaun would say, that's all great. And actually, it does, the sun does shine there 300 days a year. And the fan base is phenomenal, man. They love their Broncos. But you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to play Mahomes for the next 14 years.
Right.
You know, I think that, honestly, that's one of the biggest challenges.
Interesting.
And I know Herbert's there, and I don't think he'd be terribly scared off by Herbert, because the Chargers organization, you know, they're a tenant in someone else's building, all of the challenges they face.
Right.
But do I really, if I have a no-trade clause and I can really pick wherever I want to go, do I want to face that guy twice a year for the next 10 years? Or do I want to go play in a division, you know, that just is going to see Drew Brees leave? Do I want to play in a division that's going to see Brady leave? Do I want to play in a division where Aaron Rodgers is 36? Do I want to play really in any other division other than that one that not only has a phenom that just came out, it's got the best quarterback on planet Earth.
Right.
That Adam Gase said to me this year, one of my favorite lines of all of my coaches' conversations this year, and actually it was when the Jets beat the Rams. They were 19-point underdogs, and I was working that first game with Kevin Kugler filling in for Spielman, who left. It was a great time. And Gase on our call was like, you know what, man? Mahomes has screwed us all. Like, he makes this game look so ridiculously easy. And Gase is like, hey, man, I coach Peyton. He's unbelievable. I never seen anybody play like Patrick Mahomes can play. And if you're Deshaun Watson, who has faced him, who knows how good he is, would you really pick a team in that same division?
Right.
to compete against for the next decade, I think that could be the biggest stumbling block of all.
Really interesting point there. Brock Huard, a former NFL quarterback, has been broadcasting high-level college games forever, over a decade at ESPN, now at Fox calling NFL games. Two quick ones for you on the way out here. Thanks for doing some overtime with us. Who do you got this weekend in the championship games?
Yeah, I think Kansas City is just, they're so good. And Buffalo's defense matched up pretty well with a beat-up Baltimore O-line, mm-hmm. right? That was advantageous for the Bills to face them a little bit beat-up. I don't think they match up nearly as well. They just don't have the depth in their secondary and their coverage and handling Kelce. And golly, the crew is just... So I think Kansas City gets it done. The other side, I think, will be a little more compelling. Not only because of the star power. Aaron's not been great on that stage. You know, he's lost NFC title games that nobody thought that you could lose. Now, there's no fans there, which is absolute or very limited fans,
yeah.
which has actually played to persnickety Aaron Rodgers' favor, I think, over the course of the season in many ways. So I think I'd probably go chalk. You know, if I'm pushed up against the wall, I'd probably take the two number one seeds.
Okay, and last one for you. A couple people have asked this on the RamosLaw.com text line. Why Denver? Why did you and your family move to Denver, Colorado?
Yeah, so I'm doing some work with Compassion International. There's actually a great event we have going on right now called Fill the Stadium, fillthestadium.com. So I've traveled with Compassion. They're down in the Springs, and we moved about 45 minutes from them and just love their work around the globe, what they do attacking child poverty in some of the most difficult environments. So I wanted to get close to them. Had to get out of the rain. I love the travel from Denver and not traveling from Seattle. And then I've got some very competitive kids that absolutely love Valor High School. So Valor Christian High School. So kind of a bunch of those forces all at play. And, man, I don't think I'm ever moving out of here.
I absolutely love it. I mean, you're on to the scent that the rest of us are on to.
We just got to keep other people out.
You got to close the door on your way in.
That reminds me like of Western Washington where I grew up and born and raised. Forever. Kind of reminds me of Western Washington 20 years ago. You know, the traffic, yeah, there's a little traffic, but it's not. Now it's so packed there. It's so overwhelming with population. So maybe, you know, the class of 2021 can be the last to move into Colorado. They just kind of keep the population out.
Well, it's so great to have you around here. This is not going to be the last time that we do this. You have to come back in. This was way too fun. Welcome to you and your family to Denver. And we're just thrilled to have you. So I know we'll do this again at some point soon.
Well, thank you, Zach.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, and as far as a magnetic teammate, Stokely was that guy.
Man. Oh, look at you.
You were. Everybody loves Stoke, man. He just...
Hey, well, look, Brock, I'm telling you, I can't wait to appreciate that. Hopefully I can watch some basketball games this year. Brock's got two talented teenage daughters that are really good basketball players. So, and I love watching some basketball. So hopefully I can get out there, let fans be there this year. So we'll see. Hopefully I can get out there.
Though. Sounds great, Stoke.
All right,
buddy.
The only Brock Huard dropping by live in studio. There was something that he said that really resonated with me for all the wrong reasons, and we'll take a dive into it next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
We have officially offered Stokely and two first-round picks for Brock Huard.
Screw you, Zach. Screw you. I'll leave right now.
We ain't letting you go anywhere.
I'll leave right now.
We ain't letting you go anywhere.
That was a good one. I appreciate that one. I'm trying to be nice to you today. Look, Brock's the best. He's the best. And you know I'm picky with my play-by-play announcers.
Yes, you are.
He's flat out awesome.
He is. He's got that quarterback
perspective. I really do. And,
yeah.
I'm not just saying that, but I've told him that numerous times. I think he does such a great job, and he's entertaining. He's funny. But he's also very educational, and what he's, you know, talking about and explaining. He does a really, really good job on air, and I do enjoy listening to him.
Yep, he's a veteran. He's been doing this for over a decade. Well, there's something that he said, Stoke, that stuck out, and we've maybe touched on it in passing, but this massive Deshaun Watson conversation that's going to keep happening, unless, something, you know, amends are made between Cal McNair, the owner, and Deshaun, according to Schefter, and Brock touched on it. Doesn't seem like that's happening. So until, you know, we know something else, the you know, landing spots, it's going to be discussed. And something that Brock said there, you know, how much consideration, if you're Deshaun Watson with a no trade clause, essentially they cannot send him anywhere he doesn't want to go with that clause. Would you want to stay out of the division with Patrick Mahomes? How much credence do you put into that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know. How is he wired? You know, does he want to compete against him? Does he want to dethrone him? You know, sometimes that drives people.
Right. So, he had a 17-0 lead last year in the playoffs against those Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly the score, but yeah, you're right. I mean, double-digit lead there early.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill O'Brien tried the fake punt. Remember that?
How could I forget?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I didn't mind it, actually. It didn't work, but so how is Deshaun Watson wired? Is that something that just turns him off? Like, ooh, I don't want to go up against that guy for the next decade. Or like, yes, I that's what I live for. I live for this type of competition. I'm looking at the team that I'm going to. I'm looking at the Denver Broncos. I like these young weapons. I like this young talent on this Broncos roster. And so I don't care what they have over there. Let's go compete. So I think it's hard for me to say because I don't know Deshaun Watson. Just how is he wired?
Right.
And what kind of, you know, what is he made up of? Or, you know, some people just say, no, I'd rather not even deal with Mahomes, which you could understand.
Sure.
Let me go to Miami. Let me go. I mean, they got good teams all over the place. The landscape of the NFL changes so quick. I think you don't want to, you know, obviously Mahomes is young. They got young talent there, but you don't want to read too much into what other people are doing. I think you want to look at the situation that you're going in. But secondary, I think you do look at those types of things. But I think first and foremost, you look at your team.
Sure.
Because, I mean, look, you can pick apart. There's no situation going to be perfect. Right? It's just not if he's going to be leaving there. So we'll see. But obviously, when you look at the Chiefs, I mean, that probably comes into the conversation a little bit, I would think.
Yeah, I think that it's normal for it to have, you know, some element at play.
Sure.
Right? To which level? Not sure. You know, someone on the RamosLaw.com text line says, do you guys really want a guy who is afraid to play the best? It's not necessarily about, you know, being afraid, I don't think. But like, you
listen, Deshaun Watson is not afraid to play Kansas City Chiefs.
No.
I mean, look at him in college. Look what he did, you know, going up against Alabama and that great Bama team that they dethroned. I mean, so Deshaun Watson, you know, he's won at the highest levels in college. So I don't think Deshaun Watson is scared to compete against anybody.
Right. And I would have, if I, again, under the umbrella of me not knowing Deshaun Watson, I would have a tendency to agree with that sentiment that you just laid out, that he's not scared. He's not that guy. And I'm being corrected on the RamosLaw.com text line by three different people that it was a 24-0 Texans lead last year.
Wow.
Is
that it? Wow. 24.
You know what? Because it was that high because I remember the live wagering during that first half. I'll remember it for the rest of my life. I'll remember for the rest of my, because the Texans were up by two scores and the Chiefs were still laying points on the game on their way up to being down 24-0. And then ultimately we're getting points. I think the Chiefs had a lead by halftime.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Yes, they were down 24 and had a lead at halftime. Unbelievable.
Yeah, really, really remarkable.
Really remarkable.
I think you look at every situation, you look at your team, but also you look at the other things, surrounding, you know, that team that you might go to. It all comes into play, but I think first and foremost, for the most part, you're looking at your team that you're going to. And some people might not even care about who they're playing.
Sure.
I don't care about them. Let's
sure.
go.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
And others might care a lot.
All right, interesting conversation. You can react to it on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043.
Me and two first-rounders, huh?
Hey, that just shows your value. Hey, we got to put a package together like that.
No, you're giving up two first-rounders.
Well, oh, yeah, that's true.
Increases my value,
that's dumb. That's true. Can't go heads up. All right, I am about to go. I told you at the top of the show at 1:30 I was going to get something off my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, you play the judge, and I'm the attorney.
Okay.
And I am going to try to win you over on an argument that I don't think has ever been made before. And we'll take a dive into it next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Happy Friday to you. Hope your afternoon is going great. Stoke, every once in a while, you put your robe on and are the judge of this show.
I really like this segment. I can't wait to hear what this is about.
Okay. I am going to try to formulate an argument that on its face doesn't make a bunch of sense. All right. But I think if you look past the surface level of the hard number, I think that after weighing the context, I hope I make sense. I will admit this is an uphill battle, but I'm willing to take it on and try to swoon you over to my side of the argument.
So what's different between every other segment?
Well played. Well played.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
15 years ago today, Kobe Bryant scored 81 points against the Toronto Raptors. And I think, given the context, it's more impressive than Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100 points in a game. Here's my argument. This is largely, for me, a discussion about pace of play. You know, old-time basketball fans will say, no one plays defense in today's NBA. But in fact, the fastest era of basketball was the 1960s. The decade of the 1960s was the fastest pace of play. And Stoke, the fastest year within the fastest era was 1962, the very year that Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points. It was 1962. Now, here's important context about 1962. The average score of an NBA team was 118 points per game. For context, last year's Milwaukee Bucks and Houston Rockets scored 118 exactly, and that is the highest scoring teams this century. The only difference is, back in the 1960s, those guys were putting up the same number a decade before the three-point line was ever introduced, with the same amount of time on the clock. These guys were running up and down at a breakneck speed, and zero defense was played. The night that Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points, the final score was Warriors 169, Knicks 147 in regulation. Stoke, that's more combined points than Team LeBron versus Team Giannis in the 2020 All-Star Game. The night that Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points, again, without a three-point line, there was 90 more total points scored than the Lakers-Raptors game 15 years ago. A 90-point differential. For context, there's a dozen NBA teams from the 2000s that never even averaged 90 points a game for their season. And I don't think I'm getting in the weeds too much when I tell you that Kobe, a guard, when he dropped 81, shot a higher percentage from the floor than Wilt Chamberlain, made 10 less free throws than Wilt Chamberlain, and took 17 less shots to get there. And it's only 19 less points. And don't let anyone tell you that the Raptors were a bad team and they won 27 games that year in 2006 and try to detract from the performance. Because back in 1962, there was only 9 stinking teams in the league. And the Knicks were the 8th worst and won a very comparable 29 games. And by the way, when Kobe dropped his 81, it was in comeback fashion. The Lakers were down 14 at half. Wilt's team was up 16 after one quarter, and it was a flat-out laugher. Now, as always, when splitting hairs of two all-time performances, it seems like someone's being slighted. I'm not trying to do that. I am in no ways minimizing Wilt Chamberlain's legendary all-time 100-point performance. But choosing which is more impressive, given the context that has been laid out, I think it's the first time in the history of math that 81 is greater than 100.
I love it. I love it. Well done. Well done. Bravo. Bravo. Really well done.
Thanks,
I would ask you, how many three-pointers did Kobe make?
I believe it was seven. I'll pull it up right now.
Because you were kind of making an argument that there was no three-pointers back in the day when Wilt did it. And I would say, okay, well, then, you know, the three-point line makes it easier for Kobe to score more points than it does for a player back in the, whatever, 60s.
Yep. And you're right about that. The point about the three-point line is meant to illustrate that they were still getting to those high numbers without a three-point line, to emphasize the frenetic pace and no defense that those games used to be played with.
I got you, but it's a counter argument to Kobe scoring as many as he did.
Sure.
Because, you know, he got an extra point for the long range shot.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Where that wasn't available to the guys in the 60s. I love the argument. Well done.
He made
but
seven.
But I can't go there with you.
He made seven of them. So,
okay.
So and you got to remember, so.
Your motion is denied.
Oh, no!
Yeah. Yeah,
no!
You have done a good job, and I don't think that's. I think that's the first time I've denied your.
Yes,
motion.
yes, it is. It is.
Yeah, sorry.
And I totally get it. Kobe did make seven threes, so that is a seven additional points that he was able to accrue with the 3-point line. So
yeah, and look, different eras play different styles, right? And it's hard to compare and contrast those different eras, certainly. But you did a really good job. That was fun. Good job.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, really good job.
I mean, think about it. You got 169, 147 in regulation. Unbelievable. More than last year's All-Star game. Incredible. All right. I respectfully take your denial in stride. All right. Someone at this station said they would give up two first-round picks for a quarterback not named Deshaun Watson.
Oh, no, they didn't say
yes,
that.
Yes, they
did.
Did
Tyler say that?
I'll tell you who, and he'll join us next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.